Welcome to episode 89 of the Golf Talk Podcast. This week we're going to be talking about Annika retiring, playoff at the AT&T. We're going to be talking about ESPN's list of the hardest sports and golf's placement on that list. We're going to be talking about Lorena Ochoa, Tiger playing at the Memorial, the U.S. Open setup, and Seve Ballesteros, hoping that the U.S. team wins the Ryder Cup. Alan Olson is joining me this week as well. Hello.
Hello, Eric. Quite a good topic list. Easy U.S. Open, and Seve wants the U.S. to win.
Yeah, we'll see about that. We're leading off in our off-the-tee section with Annika Sorenstam retiring at the end of the 2008 LPGA season. What the heck?
This was completely out of left field. I mean, she goes out there, destroys the field. We look like we're seeing, you know, the Annika from, you know, 2005. And then, next year, this is it.
Yeah, it's a bit odd because she just, I swear, just earlier this year, she recommitted herself to golf. She said, okay, I'm over my injury. I'm going to try to be number one in the world again. It's going to take longer than the rest of this year to get there, I think. Unless she has, a better than Lorena year.
Yeah, I guess I'd always thought that, like you said, she was rededicating herself. So, she wanted to get back to number one. And I guess I always thought she wanted to get to surpass the 88 wins by Kathy Whitworth.
Right. Well, I thought we had 3 years, basically, of Annika.
Mm-hmm.
Not half or three-fourths of one.
Oh, I know.
It's out of left field, as you said. She's been thinking about it for a while. She wants to have a kid. She's getting married in January. She probably won't be pregnant right away, but even if she was, she'd still be able to play half the year without even showing. So I'm not sure what the deal is. I mean, it certainly makes it easier to play for her if the pressure is off. She's announced her intentions, all that, but I'm still just surprised. I feel a bit robbed, because we have not seen Lorena and Annika both at the top of their game, except part of this year, and this is the year we have to do it, I guess, and then it's over.
Yeah, I mean, for her to come out with, a third of the season, fourth of the season, maybe done, and say, this is it for me. I don't know. I mean, who are we to argue whether or not she should retire? But, I mean, I would kind of wish she would have said, at the beginning of the year, maybe let us know in January, hey, 2008 is my last year.
Maybe that would change things. But right now I feel a bit robbed. It'll be interesting to see what she plays in after this year, because I still imagine she'll play in some of the majors and things. I don't think this is by tournament golf, period. I think she'll still probably play in her tournament, maybe, that she hosts. But we'll see. I don't think she's going to be a ceremonial type golfer either. I think if she can't compete, she probably won't play.
Right. And I could see if it was a year or two ago where things weren't going so well, but the fact that she's come back and, she's had dominating victories, and I don't know, this was really surprising. I don't want to say I'm disappointed, but
I'm disappointed.
I mean, I'm going to have to, I guess I'll be at the Women's U.S. Open at Interlochen at the end of next month up here in Minnesota, because it's going to be my only shot at seeing her live.
That's true. The PGA Tour, nobody announced their retirement, but Ryuji Imada, who was in a playoff last year to Zach Johnson, dunked his ball in the water last year on the 18th hole to par 5 with water in front of the green at the AT&T Classic at the TPC at Sugarloaf, is the benefactor of a ball dunked in the water this year, this time by Kenny Perry in a playoff. So Ryuji Imada, 2 years in a row going to the playoff, now 1-1. Kenny Perry goes for the green. He misses 20 yards to the right, and his ball hits this pine tree, which is just a trunk for 50 feet, 20 feet up in the air, ricochets straight back, goes almost all the way across the green and into the water. It was the one tree anywhere near that area. Not that he still wouldn't have been, literally 50 yards over the green with that shot, but absolutely nuts. He didn't even see it. He was asking, where did it go? Where did it go? And it had gone in the water.
A slight miscalculation of how far he hits is...
Well, that or, the PGA Tour players know if they blow one into the stands, they get a drop from, right there. So he might have been playing for that, because the up and down from over there isn't too bad. But then Kenny Perry still had a chance, because Ryuji Imada played safe. His third shot was 25, 30 feet away, maybe a little more. He putted it to about 4 feet past the hole. Kenny Perry had a 10-footer up the hill for par that would have extended the playoff, and he shoved it right.
Yeah, I didn't get to see any of the Sunday Sunday action, with including the playoff, but I did watch a good chunk on Saturday, and it was the guys that I was seeing at the top of the leaderboard apparently were not there on Sunday. You had Chucky Three Sticks kind of fell on his face on Sunday, and Jonathan Bird finished in fourth, a couple strokes back. So
Parker McLaughlin had a good round going, but then bogeyed three holes in the final five, including a three-putt. He played safe on the last hole. I think he was at 14 under. 15 under is what got into the playoff eventually, but he played safe and then three putted. So he got a six on the last hole, which really knocked him out. He had no chance at that point. A lot of players, Camilo Villegas was up, but bogeyed a couple late. Matt Kuchar and Dan Forsman. Yeah, there were a lot of names with a chance, and a lot of them fell back.
Yeah, I mean, this was, for the 3 days that I did get to see it, it was pretty entertaining to watch because the leaderboard was changing, you know, by the minute with somebody getting a birdie or then following up with a bogey, and it was entertaining golf. And another playoff, I guess this is the year of the playoff.
And another 20-something winner on the PGA Tour. We keep talking about it now every week. We're now, I think, three ahead of last year's pace, and that was all year, and we're three ahead, so...
Well, we keep asking, who are the next great, you know, golfers? I mean, we've been watching Retief Goosen and Ernie Els and Phil Mickelson, and, you know, all these guys are in their late 30s now.
Well, apparently the next great golfers are about 50 of them, because not just one that's winning multiple tournaments, but 50 that are each winning one.
Yeah, so
it's a collective.
There's some great parity on the PGA Tour, and it's going to make for some entertaining golf in the next, you know, couple decades.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back with our forum topic of the week.
I mark my Titleist with a black dot over the number one.
With two blue dots.
With a red line through the Titleist.
With a DH over the Titleist.
Just two little dots.
I mark my golf ball pretty simply.
It's kind of complicated.
Bowling orange with a striped black line.
Just like this.
Two dots with a black dot over the number.
Out on tour, it's not how you mark your golf ball.
It's how you mark your Titleist.
How do you mark your Titleist?
Our forum topic of the week is brought to us by Two Tacos for 99 cents. I'm not sure what that's all about, but we'll go with that. He linked us to a story from ESPN.com, their page 2, talking about sports that are difficult. And they ranked the sports 1 through 60. Boxing, I don't think you could argue with that being number 1. But golf finished 51st.
51st.
Just ahead of cheerleading. Thank you very much.
Well below badminton. Well below rowing, below weightlifting, below table tennis, horse racing. It was ranked on several categories, including, and I'll tell you what they are, endurance. Golf got a 3.25. You know, I have a hard time arguing with that. It's out of 10. Strength, 3.88. Power, 6.13. So a fairly high rating there. Speed, 1.63. I guess speed in golf is manifested as power. So agility, 1.75. Flexibility, only a 4. Nerve, they gave it only a 2.5, 2.5 for nerve in golf, despite the fact that, you know, missing a golf ball by an eighth of an inch results in horrible results. Nerve, only 2.5. Durability, 2.38. Hand-eye coordination, golf gets a 6.0. And analytic aptitude, golf gets a 6.38, which sounds great until you see that hockey gets a 7.5. Football gets a 7.13, basketball 7.38, and even horse racing ranks higher in the analytic aptitude than golf. Nerves, you know, a lot of sports ranked way higher than golf. So I'm not sure what they're smoking, but nerves and analytic aptitude are a big, big part of golf, and we're not seeing it reflected in this list, which is why golf is 51st.
Yeah, I don't know. They have their panel of experts with people made up of sports scientists from the U.S. Olympic Committee. They should focus just on doping.
So hey, we beat fishing.
We beat fishing. But, I mean, I can see boxing. Hockey takes a ton of coordination, and I would say that those guys are probably some of the most in-shape people on the planet.
Right.
But tennis, okay, you have to be in shape, and okay, returning a 120-mile-an-hour tennis ball. But auto racing, I mean, there again, you would think the coordination required to drive a Formula One car at 250 miles an hour on an oval track.
Distance cycling got a 4.88 on the analytic analysis scale. I'm sorry, I'm not sure what's terribly difficult analytically to warrant a 5 for cycling. Distance
soccer
cycling
got a 7.5.
I
don't know. Maybe some of our European listeners can help us out with that one. But
rowing, I mean, just the list of things that are above golf is surprising.
Team handball.
Yeah, it's tough to say whether they're ranking this for, like, everyone overall, all people of all skill levels, or if they're just ranking, like, what it takes to compete at the top levels, and that would be very different. Because, honestly, a lot of average golfers probably don't have a lot of analytic aptitude on the golf course. They need it, but they don't apply it. So, but on the PGA Tour, it certainly comes into play. Every, you know, the slightest puff of wind. So I don't know. If you want to talk about it in the forum, we're going to link to it, of course. But go ahead, Alan.
I was going to say that some of them I got, but the fact that golf was 51st.
Weightlifting. I mean, what is there to weightlifting? I mean, hand-eye coordination and weightlifting? None. I mean,
you can be off by 1 degree, and that'll send your golf ball.
You can't make a 1 foot putt if you're off by 1.5 degrees, a 10 foot putt. So
yeah, the list was kind of surprising, and you can let us know by looking at the list and telling us what you think. But 51st, obviously, those people have never tried to hit a golf ball.
We'll be back with Lorena Ochoa.
I mark my Titleist with 3 red dots around the number.
3 crosses around the script.
With my initials.
With 2 blue dots. A black dot here.
Here and here.
Just like that.
With my family's initials.
With an R and a K.
With 3 blue dots.
Red dot.
Un pequeño círculo.
Out on tour.
It's not how you mark your golf ball.
It's how you mark your Titleist.
How do you mark your Titleist?
Lorena Ochoa is not actually here. We're just going to talk about her. I'll make that clear. She wins her 3rd Sybase Classic. It's only a 54-hole event, and unlike her previous wins this year, she wins by 1.
Yeah, I mean, this was some really great golf. I mean, not only does she kind of get back into the swing of things, but you had Morgan Pressel and Sophie Gustafson and Brittany Lang and some other rookies and stuff that were right up there with her, and made for some good golf down the stretch, and she ends up winning by 1.
Yeah, not the typical Lorena Ochoa win. She bogeyed the 17th from the bunker, but then played the 18th fairly safely. Although she did kind of funnel something through a very narrow gap in the trees, kind of a little Phil Mickelson-esque there on the 18th hole, but it left her just a wedge in instead of punching out sideways, and she easily two putted from 20 feet for the win. Sorry, two putt from 8 feet. So it wasn't even 20 feet. So very easy two putt to win. And she goes on to do it again by 1. So it's what, her 6th win of the year?
6th win of the year and
her 23rd overall. It was her 23rd overall and her 20th since April of 2006. She's also the fastest player to surpass $12 million in earnings.
Which is pretty impressive considering how...
She only won $300,000 for first place.
Yeah, I mean, how poor these really pay. I mean, all these victories and, she gets $300,000. I mean, the majors...
And she's basically done it in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
She's basically almost won most of that $12 million in 2 years. So, a lot of credit there.
Extremely impressive.
Tiger Woods is chipping and putting again and hopes to play in the Memorial in 2 weeks. And I think the odds are good that he will play in the Memorial. Taking from the Masters until the U.S. Open off didn't work out so well the last time.
Yeah, he seems, by his comments in the article, and we'll link to it, he seems pretty raring to go as far as to get back. Yeah, I mean, that'd be great if he's back at the Memorial. It's a good course for him. He's won, 3 times there? And
I'll be there, so I'll let people know if he's limping. But I don't imagine he will be. People have seen him a week ago and didn't say he was limping, so I don't expect he will be this time either.
Nah, he seems to be doing well, and yeah, I mean, I hopefully he does play at the Memorial. It just brings, obviously the field's already very tough, and it's a great field, but yeah, Tiger to it just adds that much more.
Torrey Pines, Tiger's home away from home, some would say, may not be as tough as they're imagining it will be, or could be, for the U.S. Open. This is an article that says the USGA may actually err on the side of caution with Torrey Pines, basically the rough. They may not grow it out to full length. They may make it a little shorter because it's a lot thicker than they anticipated.
Yeah, that's two things you don't usually... You don't think the USGA and erring on the side of caution. And, Mike Davis had some comments about they could really make this course murderous.
They can make it so that nobody would barely break 80, basically. The scoring average would be in the mid-80s, easily.
Yeah, with as long as it is. And U.S. Open rough down to, 2.25 inches?
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
And it's Kikuyu, so it's... Or part of it is Kikuyu. It's spotty throughout. So you can get a really nasty lie in Kikuyu, or you can get a halfway decent lie where you can kind of advance the ball. So that's good. Punching out, eh. I know some people love to see people punch out and, whatever, but you never even see amateurs do it. So you can't even relate to having to chip sideways from the rough you know, when there aren't trees in your way or something. So no. I've never quite understood that. So, you know, let them at least advance the ball and give them 100 yards or 70 or 50 yards to try to get up and down, which is another challenge all unto itself in the U.S. Open. So I think I'm looking forward to this. I think it'll be interesting. I think the course is boring enough that maybe they want to add a little excitement with some better scoring than we've seen in recent years. You know, Oakmont had greens and was certainly a very interesting course outside of the greens too. Torrey Pines, not so much. I mean, it's a little on the boring side. So hopefully maybe they'll spice it up with a little better scoring than we saw last year.
Yeah, I hope so. And by doing the, you know, getting the rough a little lower, and it'll be interesting to see how it, you know, how fast and firm it plays also, as how quick the putts are cruising too.
Sammy Ballesteros wants the U.S. team to win the Ryder Cup.
BS.
Well, he has a good reason.
Yeah. I mean, he does have a very good reason for wanting the U.S. to win, because it's basically, it's gotten quite boring. He's bored. Europe's bored with us. And his quote was, it's like a church service more than a bullfight. And I
can kind of see that. I mean, the last ones have been fairly boring. You know, and I think last year people looked forward to the President's Cup more than they will be looking forward to the Ryder Cup this year. So I do think he's got a point. We in the United States are very fickle. And quite frankly, if we stink bad enough several years in a row, we lose interest. Because we don't like to see ourselves lose.
Yeah, we're a fair-weathered sporting public. And, you know, if it's close and the U.S. still loses, I mean, as long as it's close. I mean, he does have a good point. I mean, we've gotten absolutely pounded. And, you know, he talked a little bit about Paul Azinger, and maybe that's the type of captain the U.S. needs. And, you know, there could be some controversy, some interest. Yeah, hopefully. I mean, obviously, we'd love to see the U.S. win. I like to see him be competitive.
Right. And that's all we've hoped for. We'll see how it turns out. It's not for quite a while.
Yes, we have more things to worry about, like the memorial, or hoping to get out and see Annika before she's done.
That about does it for episode 89 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. Check our show notes out online for links to all the stories that we talked about this week, and I'll link to our forum topics so you can add to the growing list of opinions on whether golf is actually the 51st hardest sport in the world, behind horse racing and stuff.
Just in front of cheerleading.
Take care, bye.
See ya.